Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are being joined by, why don't you just say your name and your role in the show?
My name is Ro Body, and I play the character of Jay.
And we are here talking Roundhouse Theater's A Boy and His Soul, which started on March 22nd, but lucky for you all, listeners, it just got extended to May 2nd, so you have even more time to check it out. You still have a little less than a month. Hey, thanks so much for joining us, man. I appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you for having me, man.
Okay. So this is, of course, it's like a one-man show. Tell me, before we get I want to talk about the challenge of doing a one-man show. But first, back up. Let's hit them with the premise. You know, like, who's Jay? What's the story about?
Yeah. Well, the play is ultimately about, you know, Black joys, about Black families, and really Black music. You know, it's a coming home story. Jay, who is his struggling New York City artist, comes to his childhood home in Philly to clean it out before it's put on the market to be sold. His parents have already moved to Virginia at this point. And as he's cleaning up the house, he cleans out the basement and he comes across these old little treasures from his childhood, his old violin and easy bake oven and et cetera and et cetera. Then he finds these records, crates upon crates of soul albums from the 60s and 70s and 80s that were just left behind. And this music holds cherished memories with them, you know. And as the play goes on and we listen to this music with Jay that helped shape him, this music helps conjure up pivotal moments in life that also helped to shape him. Backyard memories with his mother, lectures about music from his stepdad, playful bickering back and forth from his brother and sister, and so on and so on. And the music takes the character Jay and the audience down memory lane, so to speak. And that's pretty much it without giving too much of it away.
Yeah. And what did explain how the record collection ties into what Jay's mom always told him?
Oh, I was going to save the line, but the line is, keep a song in your heart and you will always find your way. That's pretty much the message of the whole play, because Jay has kind of lost his way. He's left home and, you know, has gone away from the nest, so to speak, to try to, you know, make it as an artist. And it's not until he comes home that he realized that he, you know, he always has these memories and he can stand on firmer ground, you know, after returning home as a man, as an artist, and as an actor. Yeah.
Yeah, there's something so powerful and so true in what you're saying about music's ability to just unlock a memory. I mean, they say that there's all this, you know, you read the stories where they play, you know, for maybe folks with Alzheimer's, they'll do like music therapy and
yeah,
there'll be people that have forgotten family members' names and stuff, and you put on a song and suddenly they remember. It's wild how that happens.
It's the last thing that goes. It's the last thing that goes. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. Okay, well, you mentioned that it's, you know, these classic soul, R&B, some disco, you know, some old classic albums. What music, what might we hear? You know, what is on that soundtrack, if you're not allowed to spoil it?
Yeah, no, I'll give you, I mean...
give us a sample.
classic Marvin Gaye, you have some Smokey Robinson, you have some Aretha Franklin, Earth, Wind & Fire. Oh my goodness, you have some Curtis Mayfield. What else? you have some... I think you have some. No, you don't have Evelyn Champagne King. Who do you have? There's a plethora. Trust me, these are all hits that you will hear on, like, you know, classic soul R&B radio stations across the U.S. Like, this is, and everybody knows this music.
Even the names you just said, I mean, that's a golden age of music right there, man. I mean, yeah. Every artist today has been influenced by those names.
Exactly. Said. Yeah. So it is a one-man show, but I'm also with these people, you know.
meet my co-star Aretha Franklin and Marvin Gaye.
Yeah. So I'm kind of the supporting role in this play.
Awesome. Well, that's really, really cool. All right. Explain sort of the challenge of doing a one-man show. I mean, was this born out of the idea of, you know, in a pandemic, or was this play written by Coleman Domingo even before all this as one-man show?
Yeah, this play was originated, I believe, in 2004 and went through many, many revisions all the way up to 2007. And yeah, he wrote it. It is an autobiographical piece of Coleman Domingo's life. But there's a reason that he doesn't name the character Coleman. He he names the character Jay, because his hope was that one day in the future, he would pass a baton on to some other brother to take over the role. And yeah, and I'm lucky enough to be able to do it. I'm blessed enough to be able to do it. And it is a challenge. I play 9 different roles, 10 if you include me. Mm. And they are, you know, family members mostly, but then you have some characters that I come across along the way that's part of like me coming out, you know, as gay to my parents, and there's a lot of, you know, secondary characters, but mostly I'm playing characters in my family. And so the challenge of this whole play is that because it's set to all of this music, there is a rhythm to it. So
right.
I can't fall behind in any of the meters of the text, or then I'm going to miss my cue to sing the lyric that I need to sing that's coming up in the song. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah,
you can't leave Aretha and Marvin waiting on you.
Exactly. And it's written in the text that way. So cool. It comes across when people watch it as very improvisational, but it takes a lot of work to come off that way. Like it takes a lot of drilling, and we ran the play over and over and over again. As Prince would say, this joy in repetition. Like we had to just, you know, run this play and drill it, you know, until we got up to speed where it was just like second nature for me to just, you know, listen to the music, but have it in the background and also say my lines at the same time and just know that we're going to fall into place. You know, it's like being in a band.
For sure. And I think the whole show runs around 85 minutes. So not too mm-hmm. long for audiences, but for you, man, I bet are you still pretty spent by the end? I mean, there's no breaks with co-stars delivering lines, or you're not going off and waiting in the wings or backstage until you get to come back out again. I mean, it is you front and center the whole 85 minutes.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. We filmed this over the course of 2.5 days, and this was 2 weeks ago. And so, you know, normally when you do a play, you know, you rehearse for 3 weeks and then you do it for 3 or 4 weeks, you know, for an audience. But I got to rehearse for 3 weeks, and I did it pretty much 4 times in a theater with just the, you know, the crew and the artistic director as audience members and the director and the cinematographer. And then I was done. And so it's out there for the world to see, but, you know, I don't have the, I never got the privilege of being able to do it for a full audience every single night. And so, yes, to answer your question, I was spent those 4 times that we had to film it. Yeah, I'm pretty awake now. I mean, I did just have a daughter, so that's keeping me up. So, so there's that, but yeah.
Man, I hats off to you. I don't know how you did it, but I'm sure you did it with a great team as well. Talk to me about being directed by the great Craig Wallace. I love the guy. He actually messaged me the other day saying, "Hey, man, have you done this? Have you seen this yet?" And I was like, "We have an interview set up. Don't worry." He's such a he's become a fixture in this town. Obviously, with, you know, Ebenezer Scrooge at Ford's every December, but just all kinds of different roles he does throughout the year too. But talk about him as a director. We all know him as an actor, but how are his directing chops, man?
Hey, you know, some people say that, you know, the best directors used to be actors and still are actors. And I think that that's true. I've worked with many directors who started off as actors, and he still is, you know, actively acting. But, you know, he just, from the experience from working on so many plays with so many different directors, you know, he has so many things in his toolbox that he just whips out. And, you know, Craig and I, we bonded when we did Master Harold and the Boys at Roundhouse. And the first thing we bonded off, the icebreaker, so to speak, was music. You know, he was very taken aback, I think, by the fact that I knew like these obscure bands like Blue Magic and I knew songs from the Ohio Players and Stylists and Delphi, because I grew up an old soul, so to speak, with my aunts and my uncles, and I hung out with them growing up, so I knew all of this music. And so when this play came along, it just seemed like it was the right fit for us. And let me tell you, in the rehearsal room, we just finished each other's sentences. Wow. He would just give me a look, and I knew exactly what the direction needed to be. And And he just helped me craft these characters, you know, because he grew up during this time period, obviously, and I did not. And so he helped me with dance moves, you know, because of the pandemic, we weren't allowed to have a choreographer come into the room. So Craig was my choreographer,
sure,
you know, and yeah, he was just such a joy to work with. And I'm really looking forward to the many things that we get to do together in the future. I'm sure this is all the beginning of many things to come.
Awesome. Well, tell us before we run, that was all about the show, but tell us a little bit more about yourself. You know, where did you grow up and how did you actually get bit by the theater bug? Was it, you know, watching musical as a kid on TV or on stage?
Yeah.
Or, you know what I mean? What was it for you?
Well, I was always like a little bit of a clown growing up, you know, and I loved attention. But yeah, it was actually in high school that I didn't fill out my electives in my junior year of high school. And so my guidance counselor did that for me and put me into a theater class. And I had no idea what theater was, you know, and we had to, our first task was to write a monologue, a personal memory. And we had to recite that in front of, you know, I had to recite in front of my classmates. And I just remembered the look on their faces after I did it and the round of applause after it happened. And it was, you know, I've been told I was okay at things, you know, before that, but I never was told that I was really good at anything,
right,
you know, like I was in that moment. And I said, okay, maybe there's something here. And so I auditioned for conservatory and went to University of North Carolina School of the Arts and went there for high school program and then also the college program. And then after graduating, moved to New York and have been steadily working, God bless, ever since, you know. And I'm glad that my guidance counselor, you know, either did that on purpose or just like a roll of the dice, you know, checked off that elective for me because it really helped help me find my purpose in life. And yeah, I wouldn't give
where
it up for
where
the world.
Was this? Did you, sorry if you mentioned it, where did you grow up?
No, North Carolina. Sorry, I was born and raised in North Carolina.
Gotcha. Yeah. Whereabouts?
Rocky Mount. I don't know if you know where that is. It's I usually say Raleigh Durham area because it's like an hour away from there, but
gotcha.
Yeah, Rocky Mount is kind of what you pass through to go someplace else.
well, yeah. If people were passing through, then they saw you in those early theater productions, man.
Yeah, they did. They did for sure.
That's all. And how old were you when you moved to New York?
I was, you know, right out of college. I was 21.
Cool.
Years
what
old.
College was it?
Yeah. University of the North Carolina School of the Arts. It's an acting conservatory. It's a conservatory training program.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Sweet. Sorry
yeah.
for all the questions. I just like to know.
No, I love it. No.
I like to get all the background and get all my details because when I sit, nothing worse than sitting down to write the article and then say, ah, crap, where I didn't even get where he went to college. Cool, man.
Sure.
Well, that's great. What were some of your first productions once you got to New York? Like, fill in the gap between, you know, then and now. I mean, obviously, we can't go into all of them because you're an accomplished man. But what were some of your first ones up there?
I have to say, New York City, I had just started to get off-Broadway credits right before the pandemic hit.
Right.
You know, I worked at the Public Theater, did a play called Socrates with Michael Stuhlbarg. And then did a show at 59th East 59th. It was a world premiere by Neil LaBute. And then I went to LA and did a play as a poem, which is a series of one acts written by Ethan Coen, who is one of the Coen brothers. And we were supposed to bring that play to Atlantic Theater Company, off-Broadway theater in New York. And then the pandemic hit. And that kind of got nixed. But before then, it was primarily, you know, guest stars and co-stars here and there. The Good Wife, I was a guest star on that.
Nice.
Unforgettable and Person of Interest. And there's a new TV show that's coming out on Stars, premiering this summer called Run the World. And I have a guest star on that. So check that out. And but primarily it's been regional theater, you know, traveling around the country, working a lot in D.C. I've worked. DC has probably been the city that I've worked in the most, at Brown House and Studio Theater and Forum Theater. Yeah, but all over, my friend. Yeah, all over. So hopefully New York City Theater will be back so I'll be able to have more credits to give you. But yeah, I've worked all over and been really blessed to be able to do so.
Yeah, DC really is a hotbed, almost underrated hotbed of theater. I mean,
Oh,
everyone's
so
in New
mad.
York, but man, DC is right up there with all the great prestigious theaters here, man.
Exactly. And what I love about the people here too, Holly Twyford and Kim Gilbert and there's so many awesome people that I've worked with here, and they just love to do the work. It's not a climbing up the ladder sort of thing. It's a they do it because they love it, and it's always a fun journey. Working with Aaron Posner on his pieces and stuff. There's a reason I always come back.
Awesome. Well, yeah, keep coming back. But for now, everyone check out A Boy and His Soul. Streaming virtually, head over to roundhousetheater.org and you can figure out how to stream it virtually. It runs now through May 2nd because it just got extended by popular demand. So again, A Boy and His Soul. Hey, thanks so much for doing this, Ro. I really,
Of
really appreciate it.
course. Of course, man. Thank you so much for having me. And I really hope everybody gets to jam out to it. It's one of those things where I never had an audience, but I hope that, all those people that would come into a theater normally and be a little reserved and feel like they can't like dance and laugh and sing along. I hope because you're in the comfort of your home that you are just free to do all of those things.
You
Jam out,
think
sing
it'll
along.
inspire anyone as soon as they watch it to go over to their own record collection or maybe even
Exactly.
Pandora and fire up some, Aretha and Marvin?
Have a party. Have a party. That's what this whole play is about. It's a celebration of this music. So, yeah, jam out. Jam out to it.
Well, we appreciate it, man. Thanks for doing this. Well, hopefully, we get to talk to you soon, whenever you do something else. Appreciate it.
I hope so, my friend. Blessings. Thank you.
You too. Later.